sodexousa.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. A decade after man conquered the moon, President Carter announced his plan to capture the sun, which he declared by the year 2000 would provide 20% of America's energy. Carter instituted tax credits and funding for R&D and even installed solar panels on the White House. President Reagan subsequently removed those panels and let the tax credits and much of the federal funding for solar research expire. And so although the sun continues to shine, it still provides less than 1% of America's energy. Sorry about that, Jimmy. Last week, President Bush reopened the curtain on solar power as part of his Clear Skies Global Climate Change Initiative, announcing $4.6 billion for renewable energy tax credits over the next 5 years. But don't get too excited about that. The Clinton administration tried a similar strategy and Congress said, no, thanks. Connection listeners, what's wrong with this picture? The sun has risen almost 8,000 times since President Carter unveiled his solar initiative, and yet America's still almost as dependent on fossil fuels and nuclear power as it was back then. In California last year, the high cost of electricity had people lining up for solar conversion. What's it going to take for Washington to see the light? And what will it take for you to go solar? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests this hour are Stephen Strong. He's president of Solar Design Associates in Harvard, Massachusetts. That's an architecture and engineering firm specializing in the design and integration of renewable energy systems. He's with me in the studio. Joining us from KQED in San Francisco is Marianne Walpert. She's worked in the world of photovoltaics for 17 years. She's currently director of projects for Schott Applied Power. And joining us from an office in Vermont in the midst of a new home search is Dan Riker, former Assistant Secretary of Energy for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. Dan, I'll start with you. Do you find one with panels on the roof?
Not yet, but it's a beautiful sunny day up here and could be making a lot of electricity or heat.
Now, you were in the Clinton administration that proposed the tax credit. So when you hear the Bush administration proposing them yet again, are you kind of ho-hum about it, or do you think that it might fly this time?
Well, I'm hopeful that credits of some sort can be adopted by the Congress. So it's good that the administration has asked again for what we first asked for in the Clinton administration. Where Congress ends up is anybody's guess at this point. They've shown some reluctance, and it's too bad because it is a wonderful source of energy that we can do so much with in this country.
And there's nothing there now from the feds, is that right?
There is some credit for the use on a commercial scale, commercial buildings, there are some credits, but for the average homeowner who wants to put on a solar heating system or a solar electric system, there really are no federal credits. There are, of course, state credits of various sorts across the country.
That's where I want to talk to Marianne Walpert. Marianne, you're in the state that has actually moved pretty rapidly towards instituting some relatively attractive credits for solar conversion. Is that right?
That's correct. California has been very progressive in offering money directly to homeowners who want to buy systems or commercial businesses. Half the cost of the system is paid for by the state programs.
When I was looking through it, I got a little bit confused. It's either 15% or 50%, depending on what it is you want to do if you're living in California?
No, actually, there are a couple of different programs. There is a 50% rebate program, which is put together by the Public Utilities Commission and the California Energy Commission, and that simply pays for half of the cost of the system, or $4.50 per watt, whichever is lower. But generally, it's about half of the cost of the system for homeowners or businesses. The 15% that you're talking about is a new tax credit that's put together by the state. So along with the 10% federal tax incentive for businesses, there's now a 15% state tax credit, which is available to everyone.
Stephen Strong, if that kind of 50% tax rebate was made available in New England, do you think people would be lining up for a solar conversion? Are we at that stage yet?
Well, certainly the technology is ready, and people are embracing both solar electricity and solar thermal, even without the tax credit. Although,
I'll just get you to define the difference between the two. Solar electricity is something that where the solar power goes into a battery and I can plug into that. Solar thermal?
Actually, there are commonly no batteries used in most of the systems.
Okay.
They're utility intertied. The solar electricity generated from photovoltaics satisfies your house loads, and if there's any surplus, it's actually exported
back into the grid?
That's correct. Solar thermal creates direct heat energy, which is used for hot water or for space heating demand. And that's stored in a large water tank, typically.
And if the technology is at a stage when people should be going for it, are they?
Well, we're very busy. We're a small group. We work all across the country. And obviously, the states that have the incentives, such as California and others, are leading the way. But we started in New England in 1974, and we have a good amount of work here currently. So people are embracing this. Obviously, more leadership from Washington and better incentives to help level the playing field would help a great deal.
And Dan Riker, I mean, it sounds in one sense like the federal government may have, over time, made itself somewhat irrelevant here if the states have picked up the sort of tax credit and incentives that Marianne's describing.
No, I think that we need to do both if we're really going to make this a nationwide energy source. We're going to have states like California that do step up, but there will be a large number that won't, and the federal government has a role to play in providing opportunities for all Americans to make use of this technology. The federal government also has an important role in supporting the continuing need for research and development to drive down the costs of solar power and improve it. And so I think there's a big role to play, and I'm hopeful we can really push Congress to step up and ensure that we have a larger role from the federal side.
When I started, Dan, by talking about Carter's announcement, I think in 1979, and how nothing appeared to happen from there. In fact, I guess the money that was put into R&D 23 years ago is making a difference today.
It's making a big, big difference. The federal government, with some money from the private sector, took solar electricity from a point at which it was a dollar per kilowatt hour. Really, the only place that it was cost-effective was literally in outer space, where you used it to power satellites and spaceships. And today, it's a fifth of that cost. Still higher than the average rate that somebody pays, but coming down very, very nicely. And one of the big reasons for that is major investment in R&D, improving the conversion of sunlight into electricity, improving the production processes so they're more of mainstream processes, a whole host of things that really are important to bringing the price down and improving the reliability.
So, Marianne, tell me what the business is like in California now. If I wanted to buy a panel and get it installed, am I on a waiting list to get that work done now?
Not much of a waiting list. The infrastructure has been growing, so there are more companies that are capable of installing these systems. There was a bit of a backlog with the solar panels when the demand grew quite quickly because, of course, our energy crisis here brought the idea of solar electricity on people's homes to the forefront. And for the first time, really, I would say the great majority of people in California really understand that they could put solar panels on their rooftop and generate all the electricity that they need. So the demand did grow very quickly once people started getting the idea that that was possible and economically not unreasonable. And That demand, I would say there are enough companies now in the business of installing solar panels on people's homes, and there is enough money available from the rebate program that, you know, you might have a month or two wait, but generally the response on the part of the companies has been very good, and the industry is growing very quickly in response to the market development. I would say that all of the money that has gone into the PV programs in the state of California has been very effectively spent trying to grow the market. And I would encourage other states and the federal government as well to really follow the lead there, and that growing the market is the most important way to spend the money.
What can we see? What will we see? Are we looking at 5% of the homes in California having a solar panel on the roof within by the year 2010? What's your estimate here?
Gee, percentage-wise, I would have a hard time guessing what that would be. I can tell you that the California Energy Commission is receiving 300 or 400 requests for PV systems on rooftops a month. So that's a pretty large demand, and I'm sorry I can't give you an overall percentage.
No, it's fine. I'm just trying to get a sense of it here, because Stephen Strong, when I would call you up and say, I'm interested in going solar. I suppose the first thing that you do isn't come to my house and say, that's where the panel will go. There's a lot of other energy-efficient work that you're offering as well.
Well, certainly energy efficiency is and always has been the best investment. And most of our work is with new clients who are looking at new construction. However, even in new construction, energy efficiency is a very important part of the equation. You have to reduce your waste and balance your loads so that you require a minimum amount of energy to meet your needs. That's not deprivation. That's just smart energy use.
We're talking about appliances, windows, high-efficiency furnaces, all those sorts of things that will reduce my consumption of energy, right?
Exactly.
And once you get past that, once you're at the stage where you're saying, all right, Dick, it's time to put the panel on the roof, are you telling me that in Cape Cod or in Vermont or in Pennsylvania that I can basically provide all the power that I want using those panels?
We have done and are doing solar houses all over New England. There's one that's well-known, right on the coast of Maine, and it produces a surplus of electricity on an annual basis, which the owners, Bill and Debbie Lord, graciously donate to the local power company on the feeling that the utility needs it more than they do and during this difficult transitionary period.
Dick, this is Dan Riker.
Yeah, Dan.
I tried this on my house in Maryland a few years ago, and it's worked extremely well. We first made the investment in energy efficiency in the house. We put in a higher efficiency air conditioner, better windows, better refrigerator, better lights. So we cut our demand, and then through a Maryland program, which paid for about half of the system, we put solar panels on the roof. We're down to $1 a day for electricity.
What did the whole thing cost you?
The whole thing cost me about $4,000 for the panels on the roof. Now, the investments in efficiency were more, but we needed to replace the air conditioner anyway. We needed a new refrigerator, so those were sort of in the normal course of things.
And any idea how long it's going to be before you recoup that investment? Did you do that math as well?
That's always a difficult piece of math because you have to make projections about where electricity prices are going, you know, whether you include the efficiency investments. But if I include the efficiency investments and sort of wrap it into one package, I'd say it's about, for me, about a 8 to 10 or 11 year payback. So it's not great, but it's not terrible either. And as the price of photovoltaics come down, those paybacks are going to get better and better. Solar hot water systems are very cost effective in many parts of the country. They're actually quite a bit cheaper per unit of energy than the solar electric system. So that's always a very good opportunity for people, and that technology has been around and working well for quite a long time.
All right, Connection listeners, we're talking about the state of the industry. We're talking about states that offer certain incentives for you to switch to solar or thermal or wind or tidal power or whatever it is that works for you in the place that you're in. Are you thinking about it? Is it something that you think a technology that where the time has come, whether or not, in fact, the president and his advisors say that's the sort of thing you should be doing? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is the skies tonight, lows in the 20s.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about solar power. It comes to our attention, not in part because President George Bush has included it in his new energy policy, suggesting that he's ready to pony up for a $4.6 billion tax credit for people who would qualify. Would you take advantage of that with or without some kind of tax credits? My guests are Stephen Strong. He's founder and president of Solar Design Associates. Dan Riker's with us. He is an expert in energy and environmental policy and technology, was assistant secretary of energy for efficiency and renewable energy at the U.S. Department of Energy from 1997 to 2001. Marianne Walpert is with us. She's currently director of the projects division of Schott Applied Power Corporation. And that beeping on the line may mean that we're down to two from three, but we'll certainly get our full complement back up. I want to just throw it open to who's ever with us at this point, and that is the whole idea that to convert to solar has always been, at least in part, something of a political statement rather than just straight economics. I'm going to save money if I do it. Isn't that right? Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, Dick. Sure, I think that people who do take this first step often get interested in the technology, interested in what it can do, how it can help the environment and save them energy. But I think it's becoming more and more mainstream, and people are looking at it in a much sort of straighter economic, from a straighter economic perspective. I mean, there's a tall new office building in downtown New York City at Four Times Square, and the upper 20 floors of this building are wrapped in solar electric panels in between the windows. So it generates some of its own electricity in downtown New York. In Japan last year, almost 1 in 10 new homes built there were built with solar energy. And so it's all over the world, including in parts of our own country. I think this is becoming an increasingly mainstream way to generate electricity, to generate heat, and to help with environmental problems, and indeed to help with some of our electricity reliability problems.
Stephen?
There are many motivations for going solar. Obviously, saving money would be a key, but our clients are enamored by the technology. They're also very concerned about environmental impact of their lifestyles on the Earth. And there's an understanding of the linkage between our very heavy dependence on foreign oil and the current military deployment in the Middle East, very unstable region. Our clients look for some measure of control over their own energy destiny, and I think that's the core of it. It's not just simply fixing their costs.
Go ahead, Marianne.
Yes, I would agree with that. The residential customers generally came forward initially because of environmental concerns, but more and more it's a concern about energy in general. Distributed energy is becoming a big topic for the government agencies here especially, and for commercial interests. In businesses making a decision to use solar energy, it's generally more of an economic decision, but for homeowners it has been more of an environmental decision.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 to Southborough, Massachusetts. Catherine's joining us. Hello, Catherine.
Hi. I live in a neighborhood that's like a lot of New England neighborhoods that have been coming up around here with great big colonial-style homes. And I've always wanted to go solar, but my house is south-facing, and the idea of putting these great big huge panels that kind of look like those Hollywood, you know, frames up on my roof, I don't think my neighbors would like it. I don't think my association that I have to put these kind of things through would like it. And I've always wondered, if they can make computer chips, you know, that can fit into a cell, is there any kind of technology out there where maybe they could create shingles so that next time I have to re-shingle my roof, you know, I could put these shingles on the roof with a solar collector built into the shingle, that maybe each shingle talked to each other in a network, you know, and was, so the entire roof was the solar collector.
Steve Strong is nodding here, Catherine. Let's hear his explanation.
Okay.
You're perceptive. There is a product out already, which has been UL listed and on the market for a couple, 3 years now, which we helped develop with United Solar Systems in Troy, Michigan, that is, in fact, a photovoltaic roof shingle. It is a direct substitute for an asphalt shingle, and you can basically do your south roof. And if you didn't know exactly what you were looking at, you'd never notice that the roof was a solar roof.
Okay, I'm getting it.
Now, if it costs $5,000 to put asphalt shingles on the roof, what would it cost to use these? Ballpark.
Probably. $6 or $7 a peak watt, and there's 5 watts a square foot, so.
Do you want me to pass my pen and paper across the table here?
Yeah, $30 a square foot, which is a factor of 10 more than your asphalt shingle rough numbers.
Mm.
Can you see it coming
but
down?
But your asphalt shingles don't make any energy for you.
No, okay.
And you don't need to cover your entire roof.
Nor would you want to, because
right.
some of your roof is facing the wrong way or in shadow.
Yeah, right. and it's interesting, those shingles that we're talking about are made by a company, and I've always found it fascinating that the fellow who chairs the board of that company is one of the former CEOs of General Motors. He got out of General Motors as he retired, and one of the things he's focused on is the opportunity for this kind of technology all across this country. The other thing that's occurring is more and more building products beyond shingles will incorporate this energy-producing material. There's windows being developed. Metal roofs, there's all sorts of wonderful building materials that will do double and triple duty, not only providing a roof or providing windows, but making electricity at the same time.
It must be kind of a fun part of to be in the business at this time, Marion, just because there's this cool new stuff that you get to tell people about.
Oh, it's very exciting. It's been a long time coming. This technology has been in development for since you said at the beginning, since the 50s. And it's very exciting that it's finally getting to be mainstream and it's really getting out there. And, you know, we're getting to the point in California where there's a PV system in every neighborhood practically. So it's very exciting to see this technology finally being used. I think people are accepting the fact that it's gotten to a price which is a reasonable price. It's not likely to come down enormously in the near future. It's a fairly stable pricing. We have supply and demand. And now you're down below 10-year payback on people's homes, assuming fairly stable electricity pricing. And as we've seen, as that electricity pricing could go up. And with businesses, you're probably down to a 5-year payback with the tax credits available. So there is a great deal of interest, and it's exciting to see.
So, Catherine, can you imagine a time when you'd actually put a great big honking panel on the roof and say, see, I'm cooler than the rest of you people on the block?
Well, I think I would if I lived up in Vermont. But, you know, I don't think I would even be approved in my neighborhood. We actually live on a private road. But I like the idea of the shingles a lot.
Well, Catherine, there's also roof tiles and roof slates that can do the job. But it might surprise you, the first solar-powered neighborhood in the entire world is in central Massachusetts, in Gardner. And there are rooftop panels all around this entire subdivision. And no one protested. There were no strikes or boycotts.
I think it's my own aesthetics, too. You know? But I do like the idea of the shingles. And I really believe in alternative energy sources. So, you know, I would pay for that, probably. But I don't have to re-shingle for another 10 years. But
well, look at all the planning time you've got. Catherine, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to Laurinburg, North Carolina now. Lisa's joining us. Hi, Lisa. Lisa, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
We're talking about putting solar panels on individual houses, and that seems kind of inefficient to me. I'm wondering what the possibilities are or the efficiency of having the utility companies collect, harness the solar power, and then sell it or distribute it to the end users. I seem to remember hearing or reading about the possibility of, I think, 100 square miles in a sunny state like Arizona or whatever, if it were covered in solar panels, would provide or harness enough solar energy to power a lot, or if not all, of the United States. Maybe that's inaccurate, but what are the chances of that happening? Then we don't have to worry about big honking solar panels on the roof.
Dan.
Can I answer this?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Marianne.
Okay. One of the great things about solar electricity generation is that it's distributed generation. You can easily put it on every rooftop and generate the electricity for that particular load. You're absolutely right. You could put it in the desert in Arizona and provide enough electricity for most of the country, but the benefit is that in not having to transmit the power all over the place, you only need to generate half as much energy. Half of our energy is wasted in just transmitting it around from place to place. So one of the great things is to be able to have distributed generation instead of central station power.
Yeah, and this is Dan Riker. I agree with that. In addition, though, there are some remain some very interesting opportunities and indeed some fairly large-scale projects which are producing solar energy at a more centralized site. In the California desert, there are a series of what are called solar troughs. It's yet another solar technology that produce many hundreds of megawatts of power shipped into the California grid. The answer, I think, is we need to do all that we can from any number of perspectives with solar energy. Much of the emphasis needs to be on distributing it on buildings. At the same time, I think there are going to be some interesting opportunities with these more centralized systems as well. And we're making good progress on those in addition.
And wouldn't it make sense, Dan, for Washington to take the lead by putting some of these big honking panels up on the roof of the State Department and, you know, making an example in the way that Carter did?
Well, President Clinton put out a challenge to the country in 1997. It was called the Million Solar Roofs Initiative, and it was to put a million solar systems on U.S. roofs by 2010. By the end of the year 2000, when Clinton left office, more than 100,000 systems had gone in across the U.S., and of those, 2,000 systems actually went on federal building roofs all across the country. The federal government stepped up in a pretty decent way to its obligations as a major energy user. So this went on government buildings. It went on buildings out in national parks. All over the country, these were actually used by the federal government. That isn't to say the federal government couldn't do a lot more. In fact, it needs to do a great deal more to support this. Tax credits, R&D, and its own energy use coming more and more from solar.
Steve, back to Lisa's point about getting the energy companies to use the sun to sell power to us. Marianne says that it really only makes sense if you don't have to move the power around. Are there?
Well, we're consulting with the Sacramento Municipal Utility District in Northern California for the last 8 or 9 years, and they've undertaken the implementation of solar at every level, central station, intermediate load centers at the substations, as well as residential and commercial rooftops. And they've found, as Mariana said, that the economics are more compelling the more distributed the technology is. It is closer to the load. It is less expensive to put a solar array on a rooftop than it is to build a ground-mounted power station with foundations and support structures and purchasing the land and doing the site cost and development and all of that. In addition, Dan is, of course, right that we need to do everything in each direction, intermediate load centers and central station, but the economics are very strongly favoring residential rooftops and commercial rooftops.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to the central station solar. I think that's also an excellent idea. I was just pointing out the benefit economically, but certainly central station solar also makes sense.
All right. Thanks for that, Marianne. And Lisa, thank you for your call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Newton, Massachusetts, and Anatole is joining us.
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I'm an architect and a member of Boston Society of Architects who's been designing solar houses since the 70s. And I'm concerned that your guests are a bit too optimistic about penetrating solar features into a mainstream of American consumers.
Why are you pessimistic, Anatole?
I'm not pessimistic. I'm not as optimistic as your guest. Because the reason is because I tried for every new client, I asked if he or she is interested in installing either photovoltaics or water type collectors on a roof or anywhere else. And 100% of them so far said no, or some of them said maybe but never implemented it. But what I'm... Also, I'm trying to do is to every April, the Boston Society of Architects descend upon Beacon Hill and ask our elected officials to do something for the sake of human habitat, and I wonder who of our elected officials are more receptive to these ideas, so we could ask him or her about it.
And, Steve Strong, this is one of your colleagues who's
yes.
Not having as much luck.
I'm sympathetic because we've been doing solar houses since the middle 70s, and yes, there could be more enthusiasm, but with the shift in perceptions that is occurring, especially in California, as we've heard, it might surprise all the architects that no fewer than a dozen major national volume home builders are now offering solar rooftops as a standard feature on their subdivisions in California, because the economics have come to coincide with an increased awareness of environmental issues, and most importantly, with curtailments of electricity supply. A year ago, we saw some disastrous problems in California, which interestingly was at their winter low point, not at their summer peak.
So if I were to choose one of those houses from the national home builder, am I buying a system which provides me with all the electricity that I need?
I believe there are various options, and Marianne might be closer to this in California. You can get as much as you want, and it's modular, so you can add some even later, like the Book of the Month Club, if you will.
Marianne?
Yes. Unfortunately, most of the systems that new home builders are putting in are not providing enough electricity to supply the entire loads of the house. And the reason they're doing that goes back to the first caller's point, which is that aesthetics is a very big issue. So as we're evolving to make them look better, people will be putting more on their roof. Currently, the new home builders, you know, the high-end homes, they want them to look really nice. They don't want to put a whole lot of solar panels on the roof. So they're putting smaller systems on than I would like to see. I would like to see the systems that would cover all the load, but that's generally not what's happening on the new homes.
You mean enough to be cool, enough to be politically correct, but not enough to really do the job?
Well, no. I mean, it's significant. It may be a third or a half of the house's requirement is covered by this, which is enough to make a difference, certainly. But it's not as much as it could be. And again, it really, I think, comes back to aesthetics, because it's easy to fit enough on the roof, but for some reason people are not making that choice.
Yeah, this is Dan Riker. I think people are not often making the choice to go completely full power, but I think a third to a half, actually, in my case with my home, made a big, big difference in my electricity bill. You also have a nice additional result of this, which is, for example, on the East Coast, where air conditioning electricity requirements peak in the summertime on a hot, sunny day. You also have the maximum output from the solar panels, so you actually are helping the electricity grid to a certain extent. The more solar electricity you can generate in cutting peak demand and the high cost.
So, Connection listeners, the hotter it gets, the more you produce, the more you save. 1-800-423-8255. Are you embracing solar? This is The Connection on NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. This hour we're talking about solar power, in part because the President of the United States, in his Clear Skies Initiative, has talked about a tax credit for residential solar energy systems. We know it's happening at the state level right across the country. But if you look at the fine print of the President's budget proposal, you'll also see that alongside the $6 billion for alternative and conservation, there is a $27 billion proposal for subsidies to the traditional energy producers. So it brings up the old conspiracy theory again, whether or not, in fact, solar power isn't doomed to die the death beaten in the corner of the corridors of power in Congress by the interests of big oil. I don't know. Steve Strong, what do you think about that?
Well, I've always thought that Washington could provide leadership, but that the final decisions had to be made by the consumers, and I still believe that. The playing field is hardly what one might call level. And all of the conventional energy sources and systems have huge subsidies, most of which are hidden. In other words, they're not applied at the point of sale. They're provided early and through consistently through the whole process. It's encouraging that the Bush administration is at least recognizing that renewables do need some support in order to help level the playing field. But I don't subscribe to the overall world conspiracy theory of the oil companies are holding back solar technology. In fact, two of the largest proponents that are making the largest investments in bringing solar electricity to the mainstream are BP Oil and Shell Oil. The CEOs of both organizations have come out publicly and acknowledged that global warming and climate change are very real phenomenon which require an immediate response, and have further said that they recognize and can see the end of the oil era, and that the next few decades will be a transition to a post-petroleum world. And I don't see any conspiracy in that. Now, there's a whole wide spectrum of thinking across the oil industry, and the folks that are closest to the centers of power in Washington don't have quite such a long vision. But this, I think, is a whole watershed.
Do you see it that way, Dan?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I don't see a major conspiracy out there. I think that what we're looking at is head-to-head competition across a whole variety of technologies, and the question is, you know, are they going to compete on a level playing field? We do heavily subsidize traditional energy sources, and we have tended to give less help to the renewable energy sources. So we've really got to level that first and foremost. And there is some stiff competition out there. Natural gas-generated electricity, for example, has been the far and away the largest source of new generation in this country. It's quite competitive. Wind energy has been growing very, very rapidly across the U.S. and across the world, with thousands and thousands of new megawatts installed. The answer, I think, again, is we've got to make use of all of the clean energy sources we can, and all of the renewables. Natural gas is the cleanest of the fossil fuels. We've got to put them all together in a system, and we've really got to emphasize efficiency. That's often the cheapest and best investment that one can make.
Absolutely agree with Dan on efficiency. Going back to Marianne's point, saying that these new houses in California may have enough panels to meet half their energy needs, I would go further to say that if they had practiced energy efficiency in their design development rigorously, that those systems might meet nearly all of the needs.
And Marianne,
that's right.
Yeah, I can't help but think, though, that when I look at what's going on in California, whatever shreds of our of the conspiracy theory that still exist have pretty well been put aside in your state, if the state government, at least, is that much behind the subsidizing of solar energy.
Yes, I agree on the lack of conspiracy theory here. The state government has responded to a demand by the populace of the state, I think. There's a lot of popular support as programs like this and other news media are getting out information about solar technology and its viability right now. And I think that the politicians have followed that. And I think on a nationwide level, if we saw more support for renewable technologies, that we'd force our administration, however reluctant, to support renewable energy technologies. There's a bill that was passed in 2001 here that requires state buildings to put solar energy technologies on new state buildings, existing facilities. If the federal government would follow that lead and require a significant portion of their energy to be used from renewable sources, that would be a phenomenal impetus to this industry.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Arlington, Massachusetts, and Courtney's joining us. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, Dick. How are you? Great program today. Steve, always great to hear your voice. Dan, I have a question for you about federal policy. It seems to be unfortunate that the Energy Star Homes program is not incorporated solar into its program, and it's really one of the most successful energy efficiency programs in new construction. It would be
What's
great.
The Energy Star Homes thing? That's not the Energy Guide thing that I see on my dryer, is it?
It's the same thing, but it's for homes. And there's a group in Boston called the Conservation Services Group. Steve Cowell heads that up, and I've been speaking to him for a long time. You know, Steve, when are we going to get solar into the Energy Star Homes program?
It's a good question. Energy Star Homes are basically a way for builders and buyers of homes to get together and improve the efficiency of homes. Typically, if a new home, is given the Energy Star label, it's on the order of 30% more efficient than the average home of its type. And sometimes it can be more than that. And the builders like to advertise that. Consumers like to buy these homes increasingly. There has been a big question about whether we ought to move towards putting renewable energy technologies into this mix, I tend to agree with the caller that we should. But again, maximizing efficiency as much as one can before the solar panel goes on the roof. If we can put the whole thing together, I think consumers would be the greatest beneficiaries.
Can I follow through with another question?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
Well, I think one of the biggest travesties is that, now Steve will certainly agree with me, I think, is that we're building subdivisions after subdivisions year after year that are not pointing south. You know, that we had the caller call in who was, she was talking about her wonderful south-facing house. That she doesn't want to put up the panels right now, but at least she has the choice. And there's, you know, there's thousands and millions of homes that they're not going to have consumers that don't have the choice.
Would it make a big difference, Steve?
Yes, it does. But we found very interestingly with the first solar neighborhood in the world in Gardner in 1985 that, well, Courtney's right. Obviously, you wouldn't want to put solar on the north side of your roof. But there's a fair amount of flexibility there, or let's say forgiveness in terms of roof angle and roof orientation if you take it across the community at the community scale. And the further south you go, the stronger the sun is in terms of its overhead path, the less critical the angles are. But certainly what Courtney's saying is that it costs you nothing to lay out these subdivisions with, let's say, solar-friendly orientation when you have the blank sheet of paper. And that certainly should be done.
Okay. Courtney, thanks for your call. We're going to Idaho Falls. Paula's joining us. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I am familiar with a place in El Prado, New Mexico, which is a privately owned land block, and the owner rents his land to home builders who build something called earth ships that use tires and cans and bottles and slate flooring and stucco the interior and exterior. They're 100% solar-powered, independent water and independent sewer. My comment is that the gentleman that owns the land spent 3 years in court fighting the gas and electric companies who were intent on placing the grid out to each and every proposed home at an exorbitant cost, even though not one homeowner would use that grid system. They're completely independent homes.
It's an interesting point. I was noticing, Marianne, in some of the literature from California that you qualify for the tax credit as long as you're connected to the grid, but if you're not, you don't.
Well, that's because where the funding comes from. It all comes from the energy restructuring. Of course, the electricity restructuring program here in California is nothing to brag about, but one of the great things that has come out of it has been that we are able to spend some of the money directly for renewables. However, since it is collected from the utility companies, it's available only to customers of those utility companies. Another point is that for systems that are off the grid, it's already cost effective. They don't really need a subsidy to justify putting in solar electricity if you're, you know, half a mile or so from the existing utility grid.
But if I was going to build it. Sorry, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
The point that the caller raises about the resistance, the biggest resistance that certainly we've seen to distributed solar generation has been from the utility companies. It really doesn't, you know, doesn't serve their interests because providing your own electricity, you know, doesn't support their business. So that's been the most difficult barrier, I think. And I fully can expect that the utility companies, not only in California but everywhere, have had some resistance to people wanting to be off the grid and supplying their own electricity.
And that's why there's now 30-plus states that have adopted some form of what's called net metering, which allows homeowners who put solar systems on their roofs to sell their electricity back to the local utility. It gives them some additional financial incentive. You essentially can run your meter backwards, and these laws can be very helpful in not fix the whole problem, but can be helpful in consumers dealing with the local utilities.
That's right.
Absolutely, Dan. It's perhaps worthy to point out that Japan, Germany, the Netherlands, Switzerland, many countries have national net metering. And that's one thing that the Bush administration could do, which requires no significant budget outlays on the part of federal funds, but just simply policy changes at the national level to make these net metering policies uniform across the country. Right now, Dan's right, we have 30-plus states, but it's a little bit of a patchwork of different parameters. If we could have national net metering, I think that would go a very long way to move solar forward in this country.
Yeah, Senator Daschle's bill, energy bill, would, for example, provide national net metering across the U.S.
Marianne Walpert, in your view, are we there? Are we where we want to be with solar power, and it's simply a matter of letting this spread through the neighborhoods and the new construction?
No. The only reason that California has made as much progress as we have has been because of the funding made available for the rebate program. Across the nation, there are no such economic opportunities. We're still at the point where the reason that people are not choosing to put solar on their homes and on their businesses is because it's still expensive. If you're looking at trying to do something that makes economic sense, we're not there yet. So solar electricity does need governmental support in order to become a viable technology. We're certainly making progress. There need to be credits given for the fact that it is energy efficient, that it is beneficial to the environment. You know, the true cost of electricity is not what we pay when we buy electricity from the utility companies. So putting in place some mechanism to truly value the benefit of green power, of photovoltaic electricity, would really help bring it into the marketplace. We're certainly far from where we need to be.
Dan Riker, what's it going to cost? I mean, we're not talking about $6 billion here, are we?
We're talking about more than that. We're talking about continuing the R&D support to drive down costs. We're continuing, we need to emphasize these credits. We need to get over some of these barriers that utilities put up. There are some big challenges out there. The good news is that we've made some real progress over the last decade or so in solar technology and in solar installations. But if we could step up support, public support, private support, and rally the country around this, we could accelerate this and really take advantage of all that can come from this technology.
Steve, do you think we're on the way?
Well, the technology is certainly demonstrated and proven. The question is, if you're looking just simply to save money, we have ways to go yet. But there are many other motivations. We're running out of oil. It may not seem so because it's a longer-term, decades transition. We also have a serious imbalance in world politics and a very unstable situation in the Middle East, which is what is basically supporting our way of life. That could go away at any minute. We have serious environmental issues as well, so everything else is very compelling in terms of making this choice. We just need to get the economics to catch up. And the industry is dramatically expanding. The unit costs of these different components and equipment are coming down, and we are moving in the right direction. My feeling is we don't have a whole lot of time to waste.
And if you're a homeowner selling your house in Vermont and you're south-facing and you got a panel on it, Dan Riker, where are you right now? Good luck.
That's right.
Good luck with your house shopping. Thanks to everybody for being part of the program.
Thank you.
Stephen Strong, founder and president of Solar Design Associates in Harvard, Massachusetts. Marianne Walpert, director of projects for Shop Applied Power, joining us from California. Dan Riker, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Energy for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. That's all the time we have for our program today. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.